that lines, three Palestinians, including a journalist, are killed in the latest Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip as the death toll in the besieged territory rises to 220. Palestinians in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah hold a funeral for those killed in Tuesday protests against Israeli atrocities. And Iran's president says the Vienna talks to revive the 2015 nuclear deal will definitely be a success for the Iranian nation. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is the World News. Our top story for this half hour, Israeli warplanes and tanks have conducted new attacks on the Gaza Strip on the 10th day of the regime's aggression against the besieged territory. The latest Israeli attacks hit several locations across the Gaza Strip, including Gaza City, Khan Yunis, and Jabalia. At least three Palestinians were killed as a result. Among them is journalist Youssef Abu Hussein, who lost his life in a strike at his home north of Gaza City. The latest deaths bring to 220 the number of Gazans killed since the Israeli aggression began. Nearly half of them are women and children. So far, over 1,500 Palestinians have been injured as well. The United Nations says hundreds of buildings have been destroyed, resulting in the displacement of over 52,000 people. Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki has urged the International Criminal Court to investigate Israel's war crimes. Maliki made the appeal in a letter to the ICC prosecutor's office. He called for accountability for the war crimes and crimes against humanity to continue to be committed in the West Bank, East Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, the Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations has criticized the Security Council for its inaction towards Israel.
This is what we are talking about. The Security Council is a shameful act of not even expressing a unified position calling for the end of this aggression. Facts speak for themselves. Until now, nobody is succeeding in bringing Israel into compliance to this global call for ending this aggression. Where should the poor go? Where should the weak go? Isn't the UN the house of all people? And isn't it the house to help the vulnerable?
Mansour made the comments following a UN Security Council meeting on Palestine. He called on the UN to issue an emergency call for humanitarian assistance to the Palestinian people in Gaza. At the same meeting, the Algerian representative to the UN also criticized the international community for remaining, quote, deaf and silent to the outcry of the Palestinian people. The Security Council held its fourth meeting on Tuesday, but it failed to reach a consensus on the Israeli violence due to U.S. objection. China said the U.S. has prevented the council from speaking with one voice. Palestinian resistance groups have launched fresh attacks on Israel in retaliation for the regime's deadly onslaught on the Gaza Strip. Qassam brigades have fired mortar shells at Nir Oz settlement in Eshkol region, southern Israel. The group also fired rockets into Eshkol, where Israeli media reported casualties without specifying. Rocket sirens also sounded in Zikim and Netf HaSara settlements, as well as the city of Ashkelon. In the past days, Palestinian resistance groups have also conducted rocket attacks on Tel Aviv. The groups have promised more attacks there if Israel does not stop its airstrikes on Gaza. A dozen Israelis have so far been killed in the Palestinian retaliatory attacks. We're now joined by our correspondent, Asher Shannon, who's joining us from Gaza to tell us more about the latest updates from both the Israeli aggression on Gaza today and also about the retaliatory attacks by the military wing of Hamas, Yazidi Navasan Brigades. Ashraf?
Well, Bardia, Israeli regime forces continue to attack the Gaza Strip the same way they've been doing for 10 days now, killing and maiming Palestinians, destroying the livelihoods of people, destroying their homes, destroying their dreams, destroying their hopes, destroying their memories. Water tanks were destroyed, sewage pipes were destroyed, not mentioning the entire electricity network in the area is destroyed, and also homes who would take these people here years to rebuild. It's not about the we're not even talking about the fatalities among children, among elderly people, among women, scores of children, scores of women, many elderly people, people from all professions were killed in this ongoing onslaught. It's just a scene from a horror movie. Can you imagine yourself sleeping in the middle of the night and you find yourself flying from the window or flying through the walls? I mean, those are the lucky ones who are still alive and can talk about what happened to them. Israel continues to show callous disregard for the value of human life, for the value of Palestinian life, because people you talk to in Gaza say, we think, actually, they believe that the world does not consider Palestinians as humans because they only hear about demonstrations, but they want action. They want action by the international community. They want the millions of people around the world who do love Palestine, and people know that people around the world love Palestinians and know the struggle, know their suffering, but they want them to pressure the governments, to exert the pressure on elected officials.
Ashraf, there was already a humanitarian catastrophe unfolding in Gaza. Even prior to the Israeli onslaught, there was the over a decade siege that has been taking place, an air, land, and sea blockade on Gaza. Then there was the COVID-19 crisis. How difficult is it right now for the medical infrastructure to cope with what's going on?
Let me just tell you something about COVID-19. For 3 days now, the Ministry of Health, the laboratories, because they were partially destroyed and most of the equipment destroyed, actually, when a building was bombed across the street, across the Central Ministry of Health, 3 days now, COVID-19 cannot be detected in the Gaza Strip. 2 million people, you cannot detect if they have COVID-19 or not. So basically, you go to the hospital, you go to a clinic, if you're lucky to walk, because hardly any cars driving around. People are afraid, not afraid of dying, let's say. They're afraid to be maimed. That's what people tell me. You know, you talk to people and say, I'd rather die than get injured, because there is no one here can treat me, because hospitals, this is what people are telling, not the ministry. People are saying, you know, hospitals here cannot treat us. If I lose a limb or I get hurt, I will have to go through hundreds of operations. I will never be back whole again. The Ministry of Health has repeatedly warned of the catastrophic humanitarian situation, specifically for the hospitals. The UN has warned. The International Committee of the Red Cross has warned. All international organizations that work in Gaza know firsthand what's going on. They've been going around taking the data from people, filming what's happening. They keep telling us there is no medicine or surgical supplies that can treat the traumas, the physical traumas of the wounded. For them, this situation right now, 10 days of onslaught, is worse than 2014 war, 2012 war, and 2008 war combined.
All right, thanks a lot, Ashraf Hashani, joining us from Gaza. Elsewhere, Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have laid to rest three people who were killed by Israeli forces there. A funeral procession was held in Ramallah for the three people killed in the city on Tuesday. They lost their lives during protests against Israel's ongoing aggression against the Gaza Strip. Another Palestinian was killed by Israeli forces during similar protests in the city of Al-Khalil, known as Hebron. Tensions have remained high in the occupied West Bank and Jerusalem outskirts in the past 2 weeks. Amid an Israeli crackdown, Palestinian authorities say 24 Palestinians have been killed so far. Protesters have marched in different cities across the United States in solidarity with the Palestinian people. Demonstrators took to the streets in the city of Dearborn in the state of Michigan. They condemned Tel Aviv's relentless onslaught on Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. The protesters also denounced Washington's unflinching support for the Israeli regime. Also in Washington, D.C., protesters gathered outside the Israeli embassy to denounce the regime's brutalities against Palestinians. In Chile, people took to the streets in the capital, Santiago, to protest against the Israeli bloodshed. Over the past week, anti-Israel protests have also been held in other countries as Tel Aviv has intensified its aggression against Palestinians. EU foreign affairs ministers have failed to reach conclusions regarding Israel's escalating violence against the Palestinian people. This as rights groups are calling on the bloc to impose sanctions against Israel. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
It was billed as an emergency meeting of EU foreign affairs ministers to discuss the deadly violence in the Middle East. In fact, critics of Israel call it an illegal and merciless bombardment of Palestinians rather than a conflict. The ministers couldn't decide on anything concrete, and so the 27-nation bloc's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, ended up playing the event down.
In an informal meeting, there is no formal conclusions. And what I am going to explain you is my takeaway, my intellectual takeaway from the today meeting.
That takeaway basically consisted of merely calling for peace and for Israel's actions to be proportionate. Rights groups insist what's needed instead is for the EU to slap sanctions on Tel Aviv.
EU, especially if they are true and faithful to their own commitment for human rights protection, there is a time that they have to reflect on these issues. And I think also the pressure coming from civil society is playing a very important role.
But as Palestinians continue to suffer, perhaps Israel's influence in the West is too strong. The White House says the U.S. will continue to provide $3.8 billion in military aid to Israel each year, claiming the regime has a right to defend itself.
The United States cannot continue to act alone and try to impose on all of us, including the European Union, their ideas. They have to engage everyone as we engage in the United Nations.
A large number of EU lawmakers have issued statements condemning Israel's actions. Some of these statements have been strongly worded. They insist Israel is guilty of genocide and ethnic cleansing. The MEPs are calling on the EU to suspend its substantial trade with Israel until such time as Tel Aviv stops breaking international laws. EU legislators are due to hold a number of debates on the crisis this week. The big question is, what difference will they make when it comes to the powers that be? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says the ongoing talks to revive the 2015 nuclear deal will end with victory for the Iranian people. Rouhani said Iran's enemies have already confessed to their defeat in their measures against the country. He said that shows the government has moved in the right direction. Rouhani added that Iran's achievements are due to guidelines by Islamic Revolution's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, as well as patience and resistance of the people. Rouhani's comments come as Iran and the remaining signatories to the nuclear deal will on Wednesday begin new talks in Vienna to revive the accord. Iran says the U.S. withdrew from the deal, therefore Washington has to take the first step by unconditionally removing all sanctions. Earlier, a correspondent, Oma Lezgi, joined us from Vienna. She gave details about the talks over the 2015 nuclear deal, which are set to begin later in the day.
Talks have been continue actually here. The fourth round of negotiations, as they're called, between Iran and the remaining signatories of the JCPOA, the nuclear deal. After 2 weeks of this fourth round of discussions here, Mr. Abbas Araghchi, Iran's lead delegate and deputy foreign minister, before leaving this hotel where he's staying to enter a grand hotel for consultations, said that he believes significant progress has been made. He also said that, however, some key issues remain that need to be resolved. And he also said that after the Joint Commission session that's expected to take place later today in a matter of hours here in Vienna's Grand Hotel, the sides will go back to their respective capitals for what he termed final consultations. So he said that there's been significant progress in the text of a final agreement, although he didn't go as far as saying that there's been any kind of breakthrough or that an agreement is near. He did make it clear that differences still remain. And of course, the speculation now is that one of the decisions that is going to be made in the capitals and in Tehran specifically is probably a decision to extend an agreement, a temporary agreement between Iran and the International Atomic Energy Agency that expires on the 21st of May.
China has accused the United States of threatening the peace and stability of the Taiwan Strait amid heightened tensions between the two powers. The reaction came a day after a U.S. warship again sailed through a sensitive waterway between Taiwan and mainland China. China's Eastern Theater Command expressed strong opposition and condemned the move. The command said such actions send wrong signals to pro-independence forces in Taiwan. The U.S. Navy said its destroyer had conducted what it called a routine transit in accordance with international law. China considers Taiwan part of its own territory and is opposed to the island's push for independence. India has registered nearly 4,530 new COVID deaths in the past 24 hours. The number is the highest daily death toll for a single country since the pandemic began. The figure brings India's total virus fatalities to more than 283,000. The surge in deaths is due to the spread of the disease into rural districts with poor health facilities. India has also posted over 267,300 new cases in the past 24 hours. Wednesday marks the third day in a row that the daily caseload is under 300,000. Authorities say this is a sign that the pandemic curve is stabilizing. India was ravaged by an aggressive second wave for 6 weeks that caused a health crisis there. South Asian country has so far recorded 25.5 million cases, second only to the U.S. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Inside Israel. While economic and health experts in Israel weigh in daily on how to save the Israelis medically and financially, there is little talk regarding a consequence of the virus that could cause the most damage: mental health. Over 1.2 million Israeli adults reported deterioration in mental and emotional state, but that figure was for the first lockdown. Now, researchers report a 40% increase in that number for a total of 1,680,000.
The first is social distancing and the quarantine. Many people are alone now, and alone for long periods of time and isolated. Depression and anxiety, we've been seeing a lot of these people getting worse, and also people without pre-existing issues. It's just a problem.
The issue of mental disorders in Israel is not new. Unfortunately, it was never properly addressed by authorities, as no funds were allocated to it. And now, with the current political chaos and budget deadlock, it seems highly unlikely that the regime would pay attention to this problem.
People are out of jobs, people don't have enough money.
Even in the military, Israelis who are drafted there fake mental health disorders just to go AWOL from the military. We are talking about one-third of the Israeli males and 44% of females avoid being drafted into the military for mental health reasons. Mati Kaspi, one of Israel's leading musicians, posted a message on his Facebook page announcing that he and his family were leaving Israel in order to protect their mental health. He blames the Israeli regime for what he called the sad situation the regime creates for its citizens and culture. Mental health experts are warning of another epidemic in Israel. They say that the emotional and psychological impact of the coronavirus pandemic are no less severe than the havoc wreaked on Israel's health system and the economy. Psychologist Eled Mardo of Haifa University, who is behind the study, reports a 300% increase in requests for psychological treatment. The data shows that 25% of Israelis over the age of 21, that is approximately 1.2 million people, report a deterioration in their mental and emotional state after the first lockdown. This, while 26% say the emotional state of their children has taken a turn for the worse. According to the professor behind the study, these are catastrophic numbers. The issue of mental health in Israel is not new. It has always been a social issue that the regime never really found a cure for. Israelis do not seek help because there are few problems. Many people do not seek out mental health services. Mental health services cost money, and as people feel the extended economic strain, mental health support is often viewed as non-essential. About 87% of Israelis with mental health issues stated that they simply could not afford to seek help for their mental health, according to a report published by the American Psychological Association. Due to almost non-existent programs amidst the political chaos and budget deadlock, there is no support for the unemployed to relieve the most severe economic distress. Steps to address the mental health issues in Israel are not being taken so correctly. Researchers point out to the lack of educational campaigns among Israelis regarding identification of mental health problems and appropriate use of mental health services offered by the health plans. Israelis are unaware of what is available.
First of all, a lot of doctors that could provide some kind of assistance or first diagnosis, family doctors, general physicians, were not available at that time. And for a while, you couldn't reach the mental health clinics. And there was a big confusion at the beginning why you couldn't reach psychologists and mental health workers. That was one source. People were locked down at home. And that caused both social isolation and a lot of anxiety among people. people didn't know what was going on. In addition, bear in mind that people were detached from and disconnected from their communities, from their schools, from their everyday life, and all that caused a lot of stress and a lot of times depression as well. So that could explain some rise in mental health states. So at the beginning, we saw the Prime Minister showing up in himself, in person, showing up in prime time and addressing the nation. But the way he addressed it, I believe, caused more panic. He wanted to make sure that people take care of themselves, maintain social distance, maintain hygiene, wear masks, although at the beginning people say it's not helpful at all, and then suddenly it became helpful. As time went by, people expressed more anxiety, I believe, due to those conferences, the daily conferences. You felt that things are changing constantly, that the decision makers often are not sure about how to handle this issue. They were learning the issue themselves. And the issue of mental health was not addressed at all. It was not an issue at all. People were worried about physical health and breaking the chains of contagion. And so the issue of mental health was not addressed at all. You know, and some we had some leaders saying also, you know, that just go out and have fun, don't worry about it. This issue was not considered at all until it was a huge pressure from public services, psychological public services, that started stressing that the issue of mental health and mental wellness will be addressed as well. This issue was not handled at all.
On social media, here's what users said. Norian said, little is known about the Israeli Jews suffering in Israel under their right-wing regime, children being taken from parents. An estimated 200 fathers a year have killed themselves. I heard this in a podcast from an Israeli activist. There is much poverty. All people deserve humanity. Yossi Bernstein says, she bets more women will suffer from domestic violence than the virus. Priya says, world's first psychiatric corona ward has opened in Israel. I had predicted this would happen. Corona will eventually go away, but people need to keep their minds sane. It's a mental challenge for the world.
There is great political instability in Israel right now. And the coronavirus is being used as a political tool, for instance, to shut down demonstrations in front of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's home. The politicization of this COVID crisis is causing great anxiety among Israeli people, and Israeli people have good cause to question the actions of their government, even the legitimacy of their government.
The issue of mental disorders is prevalent in the Israeli military as well. In fact, one-third of the Israeli males and 44% of females avoid being drafted into the military for mental health reasons. To avoid the mandatory service, Israelis rely on a military law that allows recruits to receive an exemption on grounds of medical or health issues. According to Israeli law, any individual whose health standards is less than 21 points is exempted from the military service. Some pretend to be suffering from poor mental health or disability to score low grades, an act seen as extremely dangerous by Israeli authorities. The mental health crisis in Israel is impacting all sectors and parts parts of Israeli society. An Israeli crisis hotline says it is receiving an unprecedented level of suicidal calls, and many of them are from people who did not have any previous diagnosed mental health issues before the pandemic started. According to the nonprofit organization that is supported by the health ministry, Iran, since the onset of the coronavirus crisis, some 5,500 Israelis who are considering ending their lives have made contact. According to Iran, it took 240,000 emergency calls since the pandemic started. About 60% of these calls are about dealing with daily challenges, financial and employment problems, mental health, and identity crises. The organization stated that 86% of inquiries come from people in crisis, or what it called emotional overload. So far, according to the organization, there is no end to these numbers in sight.
Well, in recent years, we've seen reports that there is an increase in Israeli youngsters trying to avoid drafting by reporting all kinds of mental health and other issues. About half of them, about 44% of them, were ultra-Orthodox, what we call Haredim, pretty much the same number, about 46%, were secular. In some groups in Israeli society, it became unfashionable to go to the military. I don't think it's necessarily a result of mental health problems among young people, partly, which I'll discuss in a minute, but also that it became not such a problem, not such a stigma in Israel, not serving in the army, because it just doesn't fit me anymore, and I'm not too crazy about military service, and it'll take 2 or 3 years of my life. I believe that having policies that change constantly, that are clearly affected by political issues, and decisions are not based on professional expert opinions, are very difficult to digest and to be accepted. When you see that the entire country is in lockdown, while actually only certain cities are red cities, because of a high percentage of sick people, but the entire country goes into lockdown because certain groups oppose closing down just those cities, you understand that there's little professional advice involved in this issue. And therefore, the trust in one's government, in policymakers, in decision makers, in high-ranking officials, has deteriorated dramatically. And therefore, you don't know whom to believe. When different ministries are fighting with each other, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Treasure.
On social media, here's what users said. Medusa is done, says she's sick of war and the endless glorification of war and military violence. In Israel, so many kids are gung-ho about going into combat units and end up with PTSD and massive mental health issues for the rest of their lives. But no one talks about that. Marwa says, how about Israel pays reparations for the mental health of Lebanese who endured its terrorism and still do down south? Jonathan says, if Israel cared about the mental health of its soldiers, it would stop making them be an occupying force that denies the humanity of other people.
Some people don't agree with the service in the army, but it's a tiny, tiny minority. There is a minority of people who do not want to serve in the army for religious reasons. But there is a small, tiny minority of people who feel that they cannot serve in the Israeli army for various reasons. some of them might be political, but it's a tiny minority. You have to understand that the people usually serve in the Israeli army willingly and not so much under duress. However, there is a small minority, a very small number, less than 1% or even less than that, who might opt for a release from the army under some kind of mental health suggestion. But this is a tiny, tiny group of people.
Researchers warn that the problem of mental health will persist with or without coronavirus because of the lack of innovative interventions. People, according to experts, need to receive appropriate mental health services, but it is almost impossible due to the limitations related to the economic, social, and technological barriers. The health ministry and the regime are not reaching out by the technology available to Israelis for their mental health care. Given Israel's multi-ethnic society, information is not communicated in a linguistically and culturally appropriate manner, researchers found. This means that the regime and bureaucracy are not using the language used by many Israelis to communicate with them. It only uses the official Hebrew language. Also, religious leaders and organizations play a prominent role in Israeli society and serve as trusted sources of mental health information and referrals. Technically, there are no too limited efforts being made to facilitate the religious and mental health care sectors working more closely together. This leaves the average Israeli citizen with mental health problems wondering how they can seek help in a helpless society.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafi. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, carefully and very carefully remember these sayings of mine. The Lord, who is the master of death, is also the master of life. The Creator is the annihilator, and the one who annihilates has the power to bring everything back to existence. The one who sends calamities has also the power to protect you from them. Remember that this world is working under the laws ordained by Him, and it consists of assemblage and aggregation of actions and reactions, causes and effects, calamities and reverses, pains and pleasures, and rewards and punishments. But this is not all which the picture depicts. There are things in it which are beyond our ken, things which we do not and cannot know, and things which cannot be foreseen and foretold. For example, their rewards and punishments on the Day of Judgment. Under these circumstances, if you understand a thing, do not reject it. Remember that your lack of understanding is due to insufficiency of your knowledge. Remember that when you came into this world, your first appearance was that of an ignorant, uneducated, and unlearned being. Then you gradually acquired knowledge. But there were several things which were beyond your knowledge, which perplexed and surprised you, and about which you did not understand. Gradually, you acquired knowledge about some of those subjects. Future, your knowledge and vision may further expand.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
One of the beautiful things which we learn from Imam Ali alayhi salam can be truly represented and found in one of these historical stories which we find about Imam Ali. So Thalabi further says in one of these places in the historical texts that let it be known to you that one day I performed the noon prayers with the Messenger of Allah in the mosque, in the masjid. Amid this, a needy man rose up to ask for help, but no one amongst the Muslims responded. The needy man raised his hands towards the sky, saying, O Lord, you are witnessing that I asked for help, but no one took heed of my request. And so at this time, Imam Ali, who was bowing in his prayer, pointed with the small finger of his right hand to the needy man. On his finger was a ring. So the man who was needy went towards Imam Ali alayhi salam, and he took this ring, which was upon the blessed hands of Imam Ali. Abu Dhar then reports that the Messenger of Allah had hardly finished this, looking towards this scene, when the angel Jibra'il, Gabriel, came down saying, O Muhammad, read. The Holy Prophet said, What shall I read? And Jibra'il said, Only Allah is your wali and his apostle and who believe, those who keep up prayers and pay the poor rate while they bow. This can be found in the Holy Quran, chapter number 5, verse number 55. And so we learn, dear friends, that sometimes in difficult situations or in conditions which seem to not favor giving charity, still, as Muslims and the followers of true Islam, we must find ways in which we can give charity and help the needy and help the oppressed in whatever way we can. And truly, when we see that these verses in the Holy Quran are clearly referring to Imam Ali, it makes us proud, it makes us happy, and it gives us more determination to remain steadfast upon the path of Allah, the path of helping the needy, the path of helping the oppressed. A beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
For the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعرف المجرمون بسيماهم فيؤخذ بالنواصي والأقدام.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks. So they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. For protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
We invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridvi.
And so when we talk about, you know, this physical fitness compared to spiritual fitness, you know, this question comes up. Who is a strong person? Who is a courageous person? The person who can physically beat others up, you know, in arena or outside arena? Or the one who can carry the heaviest stone? You know, there was an interesting story in the life of the Prophet that once he was passing by in an area where he saw there was, you know, people gathered in a circle. They are looking at something. So he went close and he said, what is going on? They said, well, there is a wrestler here. He is saying that I challenge anyone who wants to come and you know, fight with me. I'm going to defeat them. And Rasulullah didn't say, don't do what you are doing. Rasulullah asked them another question. فَلَا أَدُلُّكُمْ عَلَى مَنْ هُوَ أَشَدُّ مِنْهُ. Should I not describe to you a person who is stronger than a wrestler? In another incident, it was that there was a competition about, you know, who can carry this heavy rock. And Rasulullah responds here, you know, by saying, should I tell you who is stronger? And when they said, of course, this is where the Prophet says, رَجُلٌ كَلَّمَهُ رَجُلٌ فَقَضَ مَغَيْبُهُ فَغَلَّهُ وَغَلَبَ شَيْطَانُ. A strong person is someone that when another person provokes him by his words, says things to provoke this fellow, still he can, you know, control his anger, change his anger. And basically, he overcomes his inner shaitan. And this is where we, you know, we have to learn that when we talk about fasting, yes, physical fitness is a good thing, but it's more to do with the issue of controlling our emotions, our desires, and our feelings. You know, two hadiths on this theme where the Prophet says, أَشْجِعُ النَّاسَ مَنْ غَلَبَ هَوَاهُ. The most shajir, the most courageous person is a person who can control his emotions and desires.
Dear Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.